Next case on the court's calendar this morning is in the matter of the application of Janet T. Lampkin to register the title to certain land. Counsel for appellant may approach the podium, begin your argument. If you need to raise or lower it to suit your needs, take a minute to do so.
It looks pretty good, Your Honor.
Good? All right. Then
thank
please
you.
State your name for the record before beginning your argument. Well, that's not good.
No.
Mr. Hirschlitz? Is that good?
I think we're okay, Your Honor.
Good. Thank you. And your name for the record?
Patrick Neaton, representing the appellant, Janet T. Lampkin.
Please proceed.
Thank you. We're here today, Your Honor, on our appeal from Judge Fallon's order granting summary judgment to both defendants, Waconia Township and Jaguar Communications. Initially, I want to make one thing very clear. We are not asserting that North Shore Road is not a public road. We never asserted that, and I mention that because Waconia Township particularly made a great deal in its motion over an apparent assumption that we were claiming that it wasn't a road. And Judge Fallon, in his order, has a separate section. He's got three sections in that order. The middle section addresses the issue of whether North Shore Road is a public road. What we are claiming is the right-of-way for North Shore Road is limited to about 20 feet, 18 to 20 feet.
Judge, based on the amount of the road that's actually used?
Yes, actually used, paved and used.
Is there a definition of actual use in the case law or statute or otherwise? How do you determine what constitutes actual use?
Well, that's up to the court, I think, Your Honor. There is no definition in the statute. Obviously, we're dealing with judicial created law in Barfnik, which is the seminal case, which also comes from Carver County. That was a 1975 case. And in that case, the court was very specific that the limits of the public's right-of-way are what is actually being used. And what the court specifically stated there, that it is not limited to just the traveled portion, but it extends to the shoulders and ditches that are actually used. In this case, there are no shoulders. There are no ditches. This road runs through the relatively scenic front yard of Mrs. Lampkin. And, she and her husband have been there for nearly 60 years. It'll be 60 years this summer. Her husband, Alan Lampkin, now deceased, was a local attorney, and the record is replete with...
So here's, I guess I want to get back to sort of the legal question here, and there are a number of cases interpreting this statute that would indicate that when you're determining the actual use or you're determining the width or you're determining the boundaries, that you look at the whole road. And I think that what's maybe a bit distinguishable about this case or about your argument is that you seem to be arguing that for the purpose of your client's property alone, the width is narrower. What is your best case to support this sort of way of looking at actual use, that we don't look at the whole road, how is the township using the entire stretch of the road, but that we look at sort of on a segment-by-segment basis. Does that make sense?
Yes, I understand it, and we certainly take the position that Barfnik is the best case. I call it the seminal case, and quite frankly, it is. And the reason that Barfnik supports our argument that you look at the specific property is because Barfnik was decided based upon common law principles of adverse possession. The Barfnik Supreme Court in Barfnik used the term adverse public use, adverse use, such adverse acquired by adverse public use, and went on a number of other times. It was at least a half dozen times where the court said the township, in that case, municipality under the statute generally, has a right based upon adverse use.
Yeah, and I think that I agree with you there. I think that what the Supreme Court, because really what this is about, right, is whether the township needs to pay if they want, needs to pay your client if they want the 62 or the 66 feet as opposed to having adversely possessed it. Whether by operation of this statute they've adversely possessed the land. But I think that that still doesn't sort of help me resolve this issue about when you're looking at sort of notice to your client, that they should have contested this at some earlier point in time than now, whether we look at the township's actions along the entire length of the road under the statute or whether we can sort of segment off just your client's property and how it was used. Because, I mean, you argue pretty forcefully that we just look at the segment that's owned by your client.
Yes, and the reason I think that the Supreme Court decision in Barfnik supports that is when you're looking at adverse use and the flip side, putting the landowner on notice, then you've got to be looking at the specific property. There's nothing that puts the landowner, in this case, and Lampkins have about 500 linear feet of the road right-of-way, nothing puts them on notice with respect to something that the township may be doing a half mile up or down the road. So I think that to apply Barfnik, it has to be with respect to the property. Otherwise, quite frankly, Barfnik doesn't make any sense. And what Barfnik did is say, yes, a municipality can obtain rights in private property if it is using the property and giving actual notice by that use to the landowner. And certainly something going on a half mile away does not give the Lampkin family notice. And the Lampkin family has been very...
But what about things like... I mean, this is why I sort of struggle with this. What about things like the fact that the township has been putting up signs on the road? Right? The signs are obviously not in the middle of the road. And I recognize that there might not be any signs on your client's property, but wouldn't something like that at a different place in the road indicate that the township is possessing something more than just the four corners of the road that's driven on? No. And I think that, right, some of those actions, you might not do at every single part of the road, and that's why we have case law indicating that you need to look at the whole span.
Well, I don't think that there really is a, certainly not a Supreme Court decision in Minnesota that says you can look at the whole span. I mean, this span is probably 5 miles long. But I think that may have confused the court. Some of the North Shore Road is paved. Some isn't paved. The township supervisor who testified and provided an affidavit in support of the township's motion, owns rural property on the unpaved portion further east than the Lampkin property. He has it fenced within 3 feet of the traveled portion of the road. So are we to look at that segment of North Shore Road and say that's controlling for our property, which is improved at all times since 1965, has been improved lawn on one side and Lakeshore on the other side. So,
can I ask you about the actual use? This goes back to Judge Larkin's first question about how to define actual use. And I guess my question is, you know, we have case law that says that where the boundary of a dedicated roadway is a question of fact. Does that is actual use a question of fact?
Yes.
So here, but let's say for I understand that in your brief you dispute some of the factual the pieces of the record saying how far the snow actually goes and stuff like that. But let's just say, for sake of hypothetical, that there was no dispute that the snow is blown 20 feet throughout your client's property at certain times of the year. So there's no dispute of that fact. Is it still a fact question as to whether that constitutes actual use, or is that a legal question? Because it seemed like the district court thought that was a legal question.
Well, I think it's a factual question. The district court made a mistake regarding the plowing snow because it cited the Rivers versus Hamilton County case, and it took that site verbatim from the township's brief and said blowing snow, throwing snow is in and of itself enough to establish use. Now, that is not what the Rivers case says. In fact, the Rivers case set the boundary of the right-of-way for Hennepin County at there were seven guardrails. I'm not sure if there was a guardrail on top, but there were seven posts. And that's what they used to delineate. And that case certainly, again, supports the notion that you look only at the specific property, because that is what this court did in Rivers. So, yes, it is a fact issue. I don't think it's a legal issue. What the court...
what would the jury be deciding then? If, again, this isn't the hype. This isn't. I understand it's not entirely your position that there was snow blown 20 feet. You know, let's just say consistently that could establish actual use as a matter of law. What would you instruct the jury? What's the fact question that they're presented with?
I think that the fact question is fashioned under the specific terms of BARFNC, that the right-of-way extends to shoulders and ditches that are actually used.
So no shoulder, no ditch, that's the end of it in your view?
In my view it is, because in this case the only thing that the township has beyond those shoulders is, well, there's a culvert. A single culvert. Court said culverts. No, there's one culvert that's at best 2 feet wide.
And just to make sure I understand this snow removal issue, we're not talking about a situation where the city, you know, actually plow. So the road as it is, it's 20 feet wide.
Traveled portion, yes.
We're not talking about a situation wherein the city, you know, plows and kind of widens the road for the purpose of safe travel during the winter month, or are we? Or are we talking about a situation where in clearing the snow from the 20 feet, snow is thrown or blown or pushed onto the adjacent land?
In this case, it is pushed. Okay. They have two different plows, one's on a truck,
one's a grader. So the city is using your client's land as a place to put snow that's removed from the road that it maintains?
Sporadically.
And then so the issue becomes, does the placement of snow from the road on your client's land mean that it's the city is using that portion of your client's land?
Well.
And then gets me back to, well, what does use mean? I mean, they're using it as a place to store snow, but is use for any purpose or is use for road maintenance purpose or is use for only road travel, which might tie into maintenance? Does case law address any of this? What does use mean?
The statute does, the statute as it's amended. And obviously the legislature has worked to come up with something that is apparently constitutionally consistent with the Barfnik case, because they've amended the 160.05, and it provides use, worked, and kept in repair.
What's the second word? Use?
Worked.
Worked. Worked. So they worked on it.
Exactly. And kept in repair. So it's got all three components.
Are they ors or conjunctive?
I see them as conjunctive.
So then the argument would be use is tied to actual, you know, the road itself, not property adjacent to it.
Exactly. And if you envision a ditch or a shoulder, which is what Barfnik said, those are things that you can physically see. You can't physically see how far snow is thrown within maybe 8 hours.
But a ditch and a shoulder, I mean, a shoulder I think people commonly associate as being part of the road. That's where I pull over. It's part
right.
of the road. Ditches, I assume, again, not an engineer, but, you know, they're used to water flow, to maintain the road. Those seem a little bit different than, well, I threw some snow over here or pushed some snow over here.
Exactly. That's our position.
Understood. Okay.
That Barfnik is limited to ditches and shoulders.
I realize you're out of time. Do you mind if I ask another question?
Sure, one more question.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I had thought, did the city place cable lines along the side of the shore of the road?
The municipality, which is a township, did not. It gave a permit to Jaguar.
No, sorry. I meant cable. Like I thought that there were, aside, not the Jaguar
oh.
ones, that there were other cable lines that have been placed. Are there any other wires that have been placed?
No. Okay. No, the Lampkin family has been very specific. You don't put electric, you don't put, in the older days, telephone, you don't put any wires on our property. Those utilities come in off the side, not on the front yard.
Okay. Thank you. And that's very different. I mean, most, at least the places I've lived, it's kind of like you don't own the first 10 feet of your yard. It's like that's for the city to do all of its stuff, but we don't have that circumstance here.
In a platted city lot, there is an easement generally for mm-hmm. utilities and drainage.
But no, none here.
Not here. It's simply by user.
Understood. All right. You'll have 5 minutes on rebuttal.
Thank you.
And I see that we have a division of time. One attorney, the first attorney will argue 10 minutes on behalf of Waconia. Second attorney will argue 5 minutes on behalf of Jaguar Communications. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. Would you state your name for the record and the party who you represent before beginning your argument?
Yes, Your Honor. Andrew Wolf on behalf of the town of Waconia.
Thank you.
May it please the court. My name is Andrew Wolf. As I mentioned, I'm here on behalf of the town of Waconia. And because I have limited time, I'm just going to try to get some of the main points. So,
sorry, can I interrupt you really before you? And I don't
yes.
mean to just, on that fact question, in your brief, you have in your statement of facts information about installing cable television lines in the public right-of-way. Is that not on the appellant's property or those other portions of the public way?
And just to be clear, is that Jaguar's brief or that our
brief? It says brief of Waconia.
Okay. Yeah. Well, there certainly is other utilities that are not on the Lampkin property that are in the next to the road, the traveled portion of the road. So if it says in any way that it is on the Lampkin property,
well, maybe, and that just might be my reading of it, saying it's in the North Shore Road public right-of-way, which I had was thinking that was on their part of the public way, but that's not, I just want to make sure I'm understanding those facts.
That's correct.
Okay, continue. Please, you can jump into your intro.
Sure. So just to kind of clarify, this case is not about, you know, will the township have to pay for a portion of the right-of-way? This case is about protecting the public's right to use this road because this is a Torrens proceeding. So if the town wouldn't have stepped up and said, hey, we actually own an easement here for this road, the Torrens process would have went through. No one would have been able to object that Lampkins owned the entirety of the property without noting that there is an easement here and
without
a public road.
Without you exercising eminent domain. I mean, there's nothing about Torrens property that makes it so the township can't use. I mean, that's what Barn, sorry, this is the worst case name, Barn Fecht is about. The whole point of it is whether you can have this road without paying the Lampkins for it. Well, I mean, that's what the fight is about.
Well, the fight is about the fact that the road is not mentioned, it is not recognized in the Torrens application. So if the Torrens application would have been finalized without anyone saying, hey, there's a road here, it would have said, this is the property, there's no road recognized.
And then you would have had to have paid for the whole thing.
Well, we wouldn't have been able to, we would have had to use eminent domain to take the road, yes. But at that time, we wouldn't have been able to contest the property at all. So this is about protecting the public's right, and we would ask that the court affirm the district court because that's what the district court's decision does. It deems the public road dedicated to the width of actual use.
Here's my question about this case. Why isn't the fact that the township could not go in and give a concrete number as to what they claimed was adverse public use dispositive of the fact that there's a fact question here and deciding summary judgment was inappropriate?
Well, Your Honor, we did give a concrete number. We said that the road supervisor measured the distance that the snow is plowed from his 30-plus years of experience, and it was 20 feet from the edge of the roadway. And that
one time.
Well, this was his measurement on the conditions that are consistent with the 30 years of his experience plowing snow.
But didn't you also come in and say that under different theories it was 66 and under other theories it was 62? And the very fact that there's sort of like a wishy-washy fact there, doesn't that make this inappropriate to be deciding on summary judgment? I mean, summary judgment is supposed to be we can clearly see precisely what the width is supposed to be here, and it just seems to me like there was a lot of fuzziness around the width of this road at the time summary judgment was decided. And I get that the district court hung its hat on one set of facts, and now you're here arguing that those were clear. But I don't think at the time of summary judgment, your argument was there's one clear width.
Well, Your Honor, I think we said there is one clear width, but we also said that we're not claiming that snow is not variable, that you know, we all live here. We all understand that if it's a negative 20 degree snowfall, the snow is going to be lighter. There's going to be more of it. If it's in March when the pictures and the measurements were taken by one of the town treasurer, where we have the pictures and the measurements shown in the record, that was in March when the snow melted within days. And we all know that there's certain snowfalls that you don't even need a shovel because it's going to be gone. We're not claiming that snowfall is the same every single time, but we are claiming that the city or the town has consistently used the Lampkin property for storage of plowed snow, and that if the town is not able to do so, it won't be able to plow this road.
But that doesn't resolve the question as to what is the appropriate width. I mean, I just set aside the existence of the road. I think that there's another dispute here about how even if there are shoulders, I think there's a genuine dispute here about how far those shoulders go out. And it's not clear to me, based on the arguments that you made at summary judgment, that the township was entering summary judgment saying, this is clearly 62 feet. There is no other number that could be appropriate. I mean, my reading of your summary judgment briefs was at some points you were saying it could be 66. And why at the point that it's a fact question as to what are the appropriate boundaries and the township is entering the conversation saying, there are many potential boundaries that the district court should pick. Why isn't that ripe for not being decided at summary judgment?
Well, Your Honor, and I would disagree respectfully that we did not say a specific number. We said specifically 20 feet is the distance the snow is thrown consistently over decades of experience of the person plowing the snow, and so that is the distance the right-of-way should be established. We understand that snow is variable, but this is what will account for every, the consistent snowfall 30 years.
Then where did you get the 66 number?
The 66 number would have been regarding our other arguments, which were for common law dedication, express dedication. The 66 number was not with regard to the statutory user argument.
So on summary judgment, where we're viewing the facts in the light most favorable to the non-moving party, which would be the appellants, Why, and they at least seem to claim a dispute of fact as to maybe the credibility of this individual who's doing the maintenance, or whether the snow really goes that far, whether it's consistently going that far. Again, why isn't that then a dispute of fact, or do they need to do something else and a burden in that summary judgment to present alternative facts? Or it seems like those credibility judgments about that one individual, a lot hangs on that one person. Shouldn't the jury like look at that person and hear the testimony and decide?
Well, I don't believe there were any credibility issues. There were no, you know, alternative facts presented, and that's the issue here, is that this is what we said, we plow the snow this distance. No one disputed that. The disputes were, this snow is no different than the snow that falls naturally on our yard. Well, that's
not
true.
Isn't there an alternative argument that, I guess let me come at this a different way. Do you agree with appellant that this statute and the Barfnecht decision sound in adverse possession? Do you agree with that?
I would agree that for the majority of the elements, obviously exclusive is not an appropriate element where it's the public that is using it. Obviously, there's no such thing as an exclusive use where it's open to the public.
And I guess that, and this is not totally clear to me, but it does seem like one of the things that appellant raised was the fact that the township asked for consent to blow snow on the property.
And my
question is, you know, if this was a clean adverse possession land, right, this was clearly a case of adverse possession, not this statutory standard, consent would be an issue if all you're relying on is the snow, because if you've asked for consent to blow the snow onto the property, then that's not adverse, that's not open and obvious adverse use. And so my question is, why doesn't the fact that your own witness has sort of indicated that they might have asked Alan for consent at some point to blow the snow onto the property, why doesn't that create a fact issue as to whether the blowing of the snow is an appropriate calculation of the width?
And, Your Honor, the town never asked for consent. The district court was presented with that argument as well. The deposition transcript is quite clear. Mr. Gendrich said he's plowing the snow, and Mr. Lampkin's outside, and he said, am I doing this all right? So the fact that they're claiming that that's consent is just not, you know, that's a mischaracterization of his testimony. There was never any, hey, are we allowed to put snow on your property? But they did it anyway, and he had noticed that the snow was on his property.
I'm having a hard time, just as a homeowner, thinking about my snowy situations. So what the district court reasoned is that snow is plowed from the road 20 feet into their yard.
Well, there's pictures proving it, and there's also witness testimony establishing that that is correct, yes. And I think as a homeowner, we would need to think about this situation from the opposite. If this town is not allowed to plow snow and store it on the right-of-way, the town is not going to plow that snow, and how as a homeowner are you going to get out of your home?
I understand that when roads are plowed, snow gets pushed to the side. I'm just trying to envision how snow from a 20-foot road, you know, we assume we go from the middle, so a 10-foot wide strip of snow, there's so much snow that it has to be pushed 20 feet into the adjoining yard. Usually they just go down the street and it just piles up along the edge of the yard and it's maybe like a 5-foot pile.
Well, the record doesn't support that, I guess, is okay. What I would say. I'm out of time.
So there was no evidence in the record to contradict the assertion that you push snow, you plow snow 20 feet into the yard.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay. Then we have another 5 minutes, and we're going to hear from an attorney on behalf of Jaguar Communications. Your name, please, and why don't you lower that so we can see you. Having the same problem with my chair. It's too low.
I knew I was going to be the only one to lower this today, as low as it is. All right. Thank you, Your Honors. My name is Kelly Engelbritzen. I represent one of the respondents, Jaguar Communications, LLC. I had planned to hit just on the latches argument, because that was a separate argument we submitted at summary judgment, but I do want to start with one note. Judge Larson, you had a question about, do we look at an individual landowner's property when we decide if this road has been dedicated by statutory dedication, or do we look at the whole road? And your specific question was, is there a Supreme Court case on point? There is. It's cited on page 11 of our brief. It's Lieber v. Hampton Hills, and the site is 290 Minnesota 143. It was a 1971 case. The particular line from that case that answers your question, Judge Larson, says, quote, "It is not necessary that every part of a road be worked at government expense, or that any particular part receive attention every year of the six-year period." And this quote, Your Honor, was with respect to how do we determine if a road has been dedicated by statutory dedication, by user, right? And that is the main point for determining whether or not here Waconia Township has dedicated the road by statutory user. I recognize there's a separate question as to what is the width of the road, but I wanted to make sure that Your Honor had that piece of law for briefing.
I do struggle, though, because, this is sort of a unique case in that, I think normally the road goes in and sort of everyone, including the township, acts the same towards all of the people along the road. And this is a case where it does appear that the township had different behavior with respect to the Lampkins portion. I think that the record shows there aren't other utilities that go through their portion of the property, that the township was not doing the weeding and the tree maintenance and the things that they did on other portions of the road that sort of, because of the legal disputes about the width of the road over several years, the township itself was acting differently towards this segment of the road. And so I think that where I struggle is with sort of this broad language and Lieber, which is, the township doesn't need to give attention to every segment of the road to sort of establish their actual use of it, with, this very particular in this case where it does seem that the township acted differently towards this segment than other segments of the road. And I just don't know. I've not been able to find a case that sort of helps wrestle with that. But I appreciate your reference to Lieber.
Yes, and I acknowledge that this is unique under these set of facts. And I do think it's clear in the record that in the 80s and 90s, the Lampkins were very particular about what was done on their road, and they maintained it. But fast forward to our Latches argument and my client. In 2018, my client obtained an easement to install its fiber along the right-of-way, and it services 30 customers, including the Lampkins. And the only thing in the...
I'm going to just stop you before you jump into Latches, because I have another question. I'm kind of still stuck on what the fact issue is here. Am I right that the cables are laid like within a 50-foot wide segment?
I can only speak as to Jaguar's cables. So that, Your Honor, is actually on page 5 of our brief. None of our subterranean fiber facilities fall outside of a 25-foot span from the center line.
From the center line, which is 50-foot wide.
50 feet
road,
total.
Right.
None of ours. Yeah.
So it's not, well, and we're just talking about yours, I think, on this portion of the road.
For the Lampkins portion, correct, Your Honor.
Okay. Yeah. So is there evidence in the, because it seems like there's a lot of, there may be a fact dispute about how far the snow gets blown. And is it 62 feet wide, or is it? But yours is only 50. Is there is there evidence in the record that snow was at least 25 feet outside, or is that? Are you totally dependent on their establishing a 62 foot road?
For the argument for the statutory user dedication, yes, Your Honor,
okay.
We are hitching our wagon to Waconia Township's argument about how far the width of was that they maintained the road. Our Latches argument is separate and distinct.
Okay. So go ahead and go into that, yeah.
In the 15 seconds I have. So for a period of 2018 until they filed their application in 2020, and then they got a judgment and decree in 2021, nothing was done to challenge my client's installation of fiber, and in fact, they use it. So our argument on latches, again, just to sum it up, I realize I'm out of time, is my client is placed in a position of extreme prejudice because they didn't bring an action when they literally saw our client digging in their yard and installing this fiber. Well,
may I ask a quick question?
Yes, please.
What was there, I guess I'm not as familiar with the permitting processes for cable lines. Is there, you know, sort of the normal administrative sort of proceeding that you can bring to challenge this type of permit? Like, what was there a time period where the permitting that Waconia Township, was there a time that that permitting could have been challenged prior to their putting any wires in the ground?
I'm afraid, Your Honor, that exceeds my bounds of city law, so I don't have a specific answer on point. But what I would say is if you saw somebody digging in your front lawn and you thought you had a legal right to get payment for that, my point under latches is they had an obligation at that point to do something affirmative.
But doesn't the statute give them 6 years? I mean,
6 years for what, Your Honor?
Well, I mean, if it's like a normal, isn't like a normal adverse possession claim something longer than I see you digging in it? I mean,
right.
Like if we're outside of, well, I mean, within the statute, it has to be 6 years, right? If all the township was relying on was where your line was, this didn't happen within that 6 year period. And I think if this is sort of a normal adverse possession case, then I think they have 6 years. So I guess the question I was trying to ask is more, is this proceeding a collateral attack on an unchallenged permit as opposed to this being a latches argument?
It's just a very unusual procedural posture because they were seeking to register their property as Torrens. So if they had brought, like, a trespass claim, Your Honor, the statute of limitations there would be 6 years, but they didn't. The only claim they brought is that my client didn't have an easement. So we would argue we're well past that statute of limitations of 6 years because there was no claim filed for that. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. Just start your name before you begin so we have it on the roll recording.
Patrick Neaton for the appellant. And let me do in reverse order. First with the latches, obviously a fact question. You can't decide latches as a matter of law. And certainly not when, in this case, they put the line in 2018. My client brought a Torrens action, including Jaguar as a defendant, 2 years later. And what counsel did not mention is that when Jaguar's representatives were initially out to the Lampkin property, looking at the property, both of Janet's sons, James and Robert, both told that representative, you have no right to go on this property because the township does not have an easement and therefore does not have an easement any further than the actual traveled portion of the road, and therefore you will have to acquire an easement from us. And the Lampkin family would have given them an easement, perhaps, if they had wanted the service. But it's clearly a factual issue. The judge obviously didn't get to that issue, but it certainly is not something that can be decided at this level on as a matter of law. Then going back to the township's argument, we disagree that the Torrens proceeding would have closed the road, but in any event, not a big deal. There was never a question that we were trying to close the road. And as far as the throwing the snow, do we agree with the township's claim that we agree that at times it can be thrown 20 feet? However, the important thing is to note that under the statute, 160.05, it has to be 6 years. It has to be 6 years continuous.
Well, I mean, but that's not what, that's I think where the Lever case, the other case, you know, there are a handful of cases that say that it doesn't need to be, it, that maintenance must, you know, is it's sufficient if it's performed when necessary, which presumably would be when the snow is, you know, you get a foot of snow that's dumped and they have to come and throw it. So that doesn't seem, the intermittent issue doesn't seem to block. It's, and that's where I'm kind of struggling with this issue of fact, is what's actual use. If you agree that sometimes they throw it 20 feet, then why isn't that under our case law that that maintenance has to be performed when necessary? Why doesn't that say that they actually use it to the 20 feet? Like, how often does it have to be to rise to the level of actual use? And is that a fact question, or is that a question of law?
That is a fact question. And, of course, it's a fact question in terms of the statute, because it's not only 6 years of continuous use. It's kept in repair and worked for at least 6 years continuously. So
again, I kind of come back to what are you going to instruct the jury on? Because if we say, if our law says maintenance is sufficient for establishing actual use if it's performed when necessary, here there's no dispute of fact that sometimes the snow is blown 20 feet. So how is a jury supposed to decide what constitutes, you know, enough to get over the hurdle of actual use from a statute? I just, if I'm a juror, I'm sitting there being like, well, they said 20 feet and that then they do it when necessary, but maybe, you know, I don't know, and there's no dispute about the credibility of the snowplow guy. So how is a jury supposed to know? It's that looks more like a matter of law to me then.
Well, remember, though, the fundamental line here is the township is trying to take property rights from private property owner without paying compensation. So we start with that premise. My argument would be to that trial court in connection with fashioning a jury instruction, you can't use snow. There is no case that I can find in the country, not just Minnesota, but I cited that ALR article. There is no case that says throwing snow in and of itself is enough to establish a right-of-way. And with good reason. Throwing snow is variable, as the Minnesota court said in Rivers. You can't see it the next day. Can't see it the next morning, perhaps. And what the township is trying to do to take this property cannot be based upon the whimsical nature of snow. It just
then
does
that's
not
an error of law that the trial court here made on summary judgment to say that you could even consider the snow.
Right. The trial court cited Rivers incorrectly, saying Rivers stands for the proposition that throwing snow by itself is enough to establish the requisite use, kept in repair, etc.
And in your opinion, what does Rivers actually say?
Well, Rivers actually says that of course, that was a Torrens registration where they were analyzing the facts after the Torrens decision had been made. Then the court gave a wider right-of-way. The Court of Appeals said, no, you can't rely on just snow, and we're going to go back to the width based upon the guardrails.
I thought that there wasn't testimony. I mean, it was more speculative. Like, here there's some we have a witness, we have a snowplow, and in fact, you've conceded that sometimes it goes 20 feet. So, like, that seems different than Rivers as far as just the facts.
What Rivers said was it's variable, it's too speculative, and that's still the case here.
I think we've heard all we need to. We thank you for your arguments and your briefing.
Thank you.
Case is submitted. You'll have a decision within 90 days. We are going to take a 10-minute break to reconstitute the panel for the next case. We'll return at about, we'll say 10 to 12. Sharp. Please,
Please be seated.